You're listening to a Whales or Whales production.
You're also listening to Whales.
Visit whalesorwhales.com for more projects and shows like this one. This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music news and conversation from ocremix.org.
This week, we'll muse on how Big Boo Badman is an awesome name, chat with Laura and Travia about Eco and other contentious pronunciations, and celebrate Mario's illustrious history by playing all his weirdest music in the playlist. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Overclocked Podcast, episode 11. I am your host, Brian, and joining me today is my brother and co-host, Not Brian. Hello.
Hello, everybody. It's me, your favorite lovable Not Brian.
Exactly. Otherwise known as Steven.
I'm generally known by my negatives, though.
Exactly. No, you're not.
I'm a positive person known by my negatives, a complicated man, and here to bring you all sorts of exciting video game music news.
Exactly. You are a mystery, Steven. And speaking of mysteries, let's kick things off with our first segment, The Secret Songs, wherein we try to surprise each other with new, interesting video game music that hopefully we and the listeners can appreciate.
Oh, okay. That sounds appreciable.
I thought so. Do you remember whose we started with last week?
Do you remember what they were last week?
Nope.
Me neither. Both pick at random.
All right. You. That okay. Was totally random.
Okay. So first I want to preface this one. You remember Emily Reese?
Yes, I do.
She was on our podcast Train Station at 8 back in the old days, and she now hosts her own video game music and kind of other aspects of video game podcast herself.
Interesting.
Yes, it is true. It's called Level with Emily Reese.
Okay. Everyone go listen to that instead.
Oh, right, I have been listening to it repeatedly every single morning, and then I realized I was out of episodes and got very sad.
By repeatedly, do you mean the same episodes over and over again, or just listening through all the episodes?
I might have to resort to both of those. But anyway, I found out about the song on her show. So let's see what it is. 1, 2, 3, click. Tell me your emotions right now.
I'm not sure I have any.
Okay. Develop some.
Mild apprehension.
I'm doing a little dance. You know what this kind of reminds me of?
I feel like it could be a Teensies theme in a new Rayman game.
It feels like that crossed with the music from Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles.
I don't know that music very well, but from
lots
what I do know,
work.
That sounds kind of spot on, yeah. All right, Steven, I have to ask, what the heck is this?
This is from Tearaway, that zany little British game.
Oh, that suddenly makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a phenomenal soundtrack.
Because this song is absolutely zany and British.
Yes.
Wow, we got through the whole song. That's rare on Secret Songs.
It's a pretty short one. There's a lot of music in that game.
What made you pick this one?
Well, I picked it because I wanted to make the Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicle comparison, because I thought that was
all right,
relevant.
Well done.
But
I'm gonna,
I also
just for that, I'm going to cut it out of the show in editing.
Oh, dang.
Just that one part I'm not going to let you say.
Dang it. I want to edit again. But I just thought it was a weird little charming song. There's actually some... like more, I don't know if I want to say serious, but serious.
Almost anything is more serious than that.
Yeah. It's really fantastic. Amazing live performance. And I thought that was a good example.
All right. I'll have to check that out. My song, on the other hand, I don't think you're going to have any trouble knowing what the song source is. But I think you'll get a kick out of it anyway.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, click.
Okay, so it's Mario and Luigi. That much is clear.
Yep.
I know that battle music anywhere. But it's all... wait, it doesn't sound like it's the Game Boy Advance is what's tripping me out. It
So is this like Paper Jam or something?
Yeah, so that's the super cool thing, is for the battle music in Paper Jam, they brought back the original Mario and Luigi battle music.
Well, that's very interesting. Are there any elements of Paper Mario's original battle music that's in here?
Well, this is the battle theme when it's just Mario and Luigi and not Paper Mario, and there's a different battle theme for when Paper Mario is also in the
battle. I didn't realize what a nostalgic trip playing that game is going to be.
Yeah.
What fun.
I'm really excited to try it out. And when I heard that this was the battle music, I'm just like, oh my gosh, they remember this song was amazing.
You know what? So shout out to the end of the episode when we do the playlist. Mm-hmm. But if you want to hear like old Mario and Sonic music that you think people forgot about completely,
yeah,
you should listen to the Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games soundtrack once the Sega team took over.
Oh, really?
Because they're bringing stuff back like Leaf Zone or whatever from Sonic Advance 2.
Fascinating.
And like the Delfino Plaza music from Mario Sunshine.
Right.
Anyway, it's kind of off topic. This is a great song, though.
Yeah, it is. And it's also extremely loopy, which is kind of its charm. I feel like it's like a 20-second song or something, or maybe 30 seconds.
It's just really a really strong hook. That doo-doo-ba-doo.
It amps you up, and it's just so well-paced for how the battles work in that game. It's not like, necessarily slow-paced, but it takes its time.
And you know, like, Mario and Luigi had that little, like, dancing animation.
Yeah, they basically dance in tune to the music while fighting. It's really good. So, I was very excited to see that make a return.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of music and wondering what it's going to be like.
No, you can't just say speaking of music on a music show.
Are you sure I can't say that?
Absolutely positive.
Are you positive? Speaking of looking back.
Okay.
Let's go into the Remix Rewind. Let's look at the Aero Z, perhaps best known for his masterwork, Seven Songs for Seventh Saga, was on a quest to better learn electric bass, so he wanted to challenge himself with a project. Luckily, we're the beneficiaries, as he brought a groovy bassline and so much more to this sublime remix from Secret of Mana.
From the darkened depths of Vampire Variations Volume 2 crawls Mechanical Salvation, Requiem. Ino Cascatalo, pronunciation pending, calls upon the mythical guitar of Tubers McGee to jam on this tribute to Rondo of Blood.
Mega Neko wanted to spice up a Halloween party with some spooky vibes, and what better way to do it than create a full-on EDM chipstep remix of Super Mario World's Ghost House? It's what I would do. Actually, I'd probably just play this instead. To listen to all of these and more, head over to ocremix.org.
Wowee! That was a good remix title.
Wait, which one?
Specifically referring to Big Boo Badman.
Yes, Big Boo Badman is maybe my favorite name that a remix has yet.
Mm-hmm. And boy, did I pronounce that one guy's name correctly.
Oh, yeah. That guy? Totally. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. That guy. So speaking of Eino Keskitalo, I would appreciate it. Eino, you are a valued listener of the show. Can you please, like, write us a phonetic pronunciation of your name?
We could use a pronunciation guide, preferably like 3 or 4 pages, or describing the etymology of the language and how your name fits into it, and also several MP3 files, pronouncing it in every possible accent or variation. That would be very useful.
Or at least just send us one MP3 that I can then paste over every time we say your name.
That too. You know, whatever's easier for you.
Of all the people to be so prolific on the site.
All right.
Nothing against the music. It's awesome every time.
Let's move into our next segment here, ripped, zipped, and extracted from the headlines. For people who don't know by now, this is our news segment, and this is a very slow news week. So I was able to find one interesting piece of news, though, that I at least thought was interesting, and thus I assume everyone else will as well, which is that Yasunori Mitsuda is scoring a new game. He does this sometimes, but isn't really doing that much these days. He's known for things like Chrono Trigger.
Oh, that's a good
Chrono
one
Cross,
right there.
That stuff. He's somewhat prolific, I think, in the video game scene. And he is,
you know, as much as I can't get into JRPGs, I will never debate the fact that Chrono Trigger is an incredible soundtrack.
I will not either, because I haven't heard it entirely.
Well, I recommend that you heard it.
I'll do that. It's one of those soundtracks that I definitely need to catch up with. But another interesting soundtrack that I want to catch up with when it's out is the score that Yasunori Mitsuda is doing for Valkyria Azure Revolution. And this is a new game in the Valkyria Chronicles series that is coming to PS4 in 2016. And he's going to be doing the music for it. I don't believe, and I could be wrong here, but I don't believe he's done the music for any of the previous games. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I also think it's interesting that we are now planning to catch up on music. That's how
well,
far
we are going to fall behind. So, you know, might as well plan ahead.
Yeah. That's very cool, though. Also gives us another reason that buying that PlayStation 4 wasn't a mistake.
if it even comes to America, which I'm not positive it is.
And from what I have heard of his music, I think Mitsuda will do just fine in the Valkyria world. I think it's going to be a good pairing.
I do, too. I'm excited to see it return. I think it was on PSP for the last couple games, so seeing it return to the console is going to be an interesting thing. Hopefully it'll also come to PC again.
They re-released the first game on Steam, is what I'm trying to say here.
Exactly. So we'll see. I never did finish that first game, but I was a big fan of what I played. So
it's
good. Cool soundtrack as well.
So, Brian?
Yes.
Go away. It's time for an intern interview, and I don't need you. Welcome back to the Intune interview, the part of the Overclocked podcast where we talk to composers about the music they compose. I am Steven, returning again without my co-host Brian. It seems he must have gotten lost in the forest since the last break. I don't know what happened, but it's just me this time. Scheduling conflicts, you know how it goes. The laughter you already hear in the background is our good friend Laura Introvia. Is that how you pronounce it? Introvia. That is how you pronounce her last name. I always forget. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you for having me back. It's good to be doing another interview with you.
Oh, well, absolutely. And for those curious on why Laura is back without ever having been on the show before,
I realized I made that mistake right as I said it.
Everyone makes that mistake. We've had a lot of repeat guests recently. She was on Train Station, as many of our fine guests on the Overclocked podcast have been. Train Station at 8, our previous video game music podcast. So it's like a little reunion. And so we brought Laura on the show this time, asking her to bring one of her own remixes, I suppose you could say, an arrangement that she made. And the one that she proposed was one from the game Eco by Team Eco. So, Laura, before we get into talking about the meat of the song, could you maybe introduce to those unfamiliar with you kind of who you are and what kind of music you make?
Absolutely. I have been working as a musician and a recording artist and arranger in the video game industry for about 6 or 7 years now, and a lot of my work is exactly that. It's arranging. I've done a lot of orchestrations for shows like Video Games Live and also for fan albums, and on the side I like to do my own personal projects, and this was one of them. This song that Steven just mentioned was You Were There from Eco. And it was, it started off as just, should I just begin talking about the song?
Yeah, go for it. That's why you're here.
Well, let me tell you, I had actually not played the game before. My friend Brian DiDomenico, who is also, he's the keyboardist in the Megas. He was the, and still does this from time to time as a stage manager and production manager for Video Games Live. That's how I met him. And he had told me about this song on one of the very first shows I did with VGL and how much he enjoyed it and that he wished it would be added to the show. So I had never even heard of the game. And I looked it up and I just loved it. And it was stuck in my head for like 5 years before I finally did something with it. And it was one of those things that kind of congealed over time. It's the end credits song from the game. And I don't want to spoil any part of the game, but it seemed like a very chill song for all of the drama that had gone on in the game. So when I was working on my arrangement, I wanted it to kind of convey a particular scene where there's a lot of tension, and it's possibly the most dramatic moment in the game from what I can tell, but I wanted it to tell the story of that moment and not just be like the mellow end credits theme, but to actually tell a story from the game. So that's kind of how I approached it.
And as someone who has played through ECO numerous times, I really appreciated this take on it, because you're right. It was much more of a melancholy background piece before.
Yes.
But when you listen to this on its own, it's taking the reins of the story on its own without the visuals.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm glad you feel that way.
Absolutely. It's one of those songs that I almost didn't notice when I was playing the game because I was so caught up in the moment, but then when I went back and listened to it, suddenly all these memories flooded back, and I remembered all of these things I had done. It's a very, very touching story.
Absolutely.
So for those who haven't played it, we won't spoil it, but you might want to consider running through it, and even if you don't want to take the time, I honestly think it's worth watching some of the cutscenes on YouTube or something.
But. Absolutely. Yeah, I felt like I got a good idea of the game from doing that, because I didn't have the system to play it, even though I really wanted to. So I just looked up a bunch of scenes, and I was so taken by I think the art direction and the way they handled lighting in the game was kind of revolutionary for its time. So that in particular was something I noticed. I had played Shadow of the Colossus, actually.
Oh, good.
I had played that before I heard this song, so I kind of knew that it was supposed to be a spiritual sequel to it, even though Shadow came out after it. Yeah, Eco came first, right. And then Shadow came out. So in any case, I really love these stories where there's actually very few details and you can kind of just fill in the blanks. Like for Shadow, it's just like, you know, I'm not spoiling any of the game or the ending, of course, but you just are, here's this character and here is his goal. And you don't know why he's trying to do this. You don't know who the person is that he's trying to help, but he is here to do this, and he will literally do anything. And I love that kind of style of storytelling in Eco as well, where it's just these two characters, you know, very little about them. They don't even speak the same language, but they would do anything to protect each other because they're all they have. You know, it's not like a romantic relationship even. It's just this relationship. It just
two
is.
Souls trapped in this really, really desolate
exactly.
castle.
Exactly. And it's like how we need each other to survive. We literally need each other to survive.
Figuratively, metaphorically, physically, any way you can slice
dramatically.
It. but and for those who haven't played the game, you know, we kind of described it, but it's really kind of a puzzle pseudo platformer as you're running around a big empty castle and just trying to leave, but it's very hard to do. The art design is fantastic, much like Shadow of the Colossus, which is a bigger hit probably and one of my favorite games of all time, but they're both beautiful,
right?
So I guess with all that background out of the way, this would probably be a good time to play the song, and then
absolutely.
We can come back and chat about it.
Absolutely.
Shadows of my mind.
Now we're back to chat about it. That was the arranged version of You Were There, originally from Eco, mm-hmm. and arranged by Laura Entropia, who is still in the room.
I haven't left.
So you mentioned before that your vision was to kind of give it a little more of a dramatic take, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a little more into the nuts and bolts, how does that differ from the original? What were the major sweeping changes that you made?
Well, I think in the original, it's mostly just piano, like on a kind of a Rhodes piano sound, and then mm-hmm. like a drum set that kind of adds, it's not like a rock piece by any means, but it adds a beat to it. And it's a boy soprano singing with very, very simply. And there's a lot of like weird sound design going on in the background as well. I say weird. It's cool. It's interesting. I like listening to it, but it's very like kind of magical in a disorienting way, I find.
Yeah.
And in my version, I didn't want to play around with really sound design at all. It's that's not really my thing. Like I struggle with technology a lot when I'm trying uh-huh. to make remixes and stuff, so I prefer to use like as organic instruments as possible. And I also wanted to challenge myself to record myself playing piano, which ironically, like I'm not afraid to do it now. And like I've been playing, you know, I play piano and organ in church gigs all the time, but I never like recorded myself in a song. I always had uh-huh. this weird phobia about performing on piano in front of people, and I was like, I bet I could do this. I could come up with a simple piano arrangement, and it came out really nice. And the other elements I wanted, I think the first idea I had was for the climax of the piece. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted this moment that felt like, without spoiling anything, the chasm. I wanted there to be this stretch that just felt like there was all of this space that had to be, you know, covered in such a short span of time. And I wanted to convey that. So I had, the first idea I had was the string sustain in the middle of the climax, right before the, you were there. And right when, you know, their hands meet and everything, it's really felt like it felt like he was running, you know, so the that was the first thing I came up with. And then I think from there, I was trying to play around with the harmonies and add a lot of stacked, like just added tones to the, you know, the original harmonies are pretty straightforward. There were, you know, kind of jazzy in some spots. I say jazzy. It wasn't like true jazz. It, you know, it had like seventh and ninth chords and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to stack more like just this wall of sound at the climax. And then I worked backwards from there to get back to the like opening of the piece. And I kind of knew that I wanted it to start with just voice and piano. And then I started thinking like, okay, you know what? Maybe I should have like a little flute line here to get the energy going. And then the strings should come in at this point. But it helped to start from the climax and work my way back to know where I was headed so that I could pace it out properly.
Yeah, no, I get that. Mm-hmm. You kind of had the ending in mind and then you can make a map to get there.
Exactly, exactly. So then the challenge, I think the hardest part was after I hit that climax, was keeping the energy up for that next like 20 measures when they're hitting the chorus again. You were there, countless visions they haunt me in my sleep. I had to maintain the energy I had built because I didn't want the calm down to happen until the very last verse. So that was a bit of a challenge as well. So then I had to do some really creative string textures to keep the energy going. Like I have a lot of moving lines and counter melodies going on. So it really became about the string writing. And I felt like I personally feel like I made a lot of improvements in my own style just from working on this piece. But it was a challenge to try to figure out how to keep interest going without losing, you know, without becoming too long, you know what I mean? Like in this climactic moment. But I think it came out really well. And I think the last thing I added was the vocals, like the vocal harmonies and like words in the backgrounds. Like there were certain things that I wanted to be. There was this one theme, no, no mori, no, no mori. I was like, oh, that'll be cool. You know, I should put that in the background and it'll be like a little Easter egg for people that know what that word means in the game. And just layering a bunch of stuff together, basically.
Do you know what that means? Because I don't.
I believe it means thank you in Yorda's language. I could be totally wrong about that. But
well, I'm going to pretend that's right, because that's fitting and dramatic. I like it. So did you perform all of the different elements? Did anyone else contribute?
Oh, yes. My friend Gabriel, who runs his own orchestra in Peru, Animatissimo, he played violin and viola for this, because I had showed it to my good friend and my frequent collaborator, Jared Cowing. I showed him the arrangement as I was working on it. So I'd performed the piano, the vocals, and the flute, and then I was using string samples, and Jared said, I really like it. It's just such a shame that, like, you can only get so much out of a string sample. Could you get someone to record, like, even one live string, you know, to sweeten it? And so I immediately asked my friend Gabriel. He's the first one I thought of, especially because he's a violist, first and foremost, although he does play violin. And I wanted there to be, I had created this like hopefully really fun viola line that I really wanted to hear performed. So he was the perfect choice. So he ended up recording a little bit for that as well. And I think that was basically it.
That's pretty rad, especially since you mentioned that you weren't super, you know, confident with the piano bit. And I mean, it came out well, but you know, I like watching when people have to struggle with something that they are not used to struggling with or that they haven't put out there before.
Yeah, absolutely. It adds a lot, I find, when you see an artist like try to, you know, kind of stretch their boundaries a little bit. And
yeah.
Especially when we started performing it with VGL, I was trying to figure out how I would do, because the piano part, I didn't write it out, and it was just something that I kind of, you know, it's very simple, you know, it's just like basically chords and me kind of noodling around with some arpeggios and things, but I didn't really want to like write out a part, and it was so integral to the piece that I was worried about, like, you know, at a VGL show, it's just like whoever they hire that day, this might be the first time that they're even seeing the piece, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of important. So I was like, you know what, I sing and play in church all the time, I'm just going to do it, and I'm just going to put myself in the situation where I'm going to say, I need to learn how to do this well, because I'm going to perform this in front of a lot of people, and I'm going to be good at this, you know, like kind of kind of an approach. So I practiced a lot to feel confident about it, and now I feel more confident as a musician as a whole as a result of like trying to push myself. You know, again, it's like it's such a simple piano part. It's really like, it's not like I was playing like, you know, a concerto or something like that, but it felt really good to tackle something that I knew was going to be a source of discomfort for me.
Totally. I mean, everyone has their own like high points and low points when it comes to music. Mm-hmm. I mean, I only have low points, but other than that, like we talking to different people just for this interview series, and you know, we hear some people are, you know, born for improv, and some people can only, you know, sequence in the private of their own home, and some mm-hmm. people love performing live. And
yeah, totally. I was listening to the interview that you did with Doug Perry, and it's funny because I can't even comprehend how that man processes music, because like improvising things to me is the hardest thing in the world. And he'll just come up with stuff on the fly, like beautifully, you know, like he'd practiced it like a million times. And I can't get enough of that guy. I really admire how strong of an improviser he is, and anybody else that can do that. Cause by far improvisation in jazz is my weakest point. Like, absolutely.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I have to see something on a page.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I feel like if I were to start taking up music as a hobby, mm-hmm. I would gravitate towards jazz and improv mm-hmm. and think I was getting pretty good at it, and then hit a wall at some point. Like, I just have that strong feeling. I'll test it out someday. So what would you say, like, your number one strong point is? Is it vocals? Is it like the flute and wind instruments?
That's a good question. I guess in terms of performance, definitely vocal, I think, is what I consider to be my primary instrument, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I always considered flute to be like my secondary. And then piano I would have put last. But I've been playing more piano this year, again, as a result of my day job, right? So I've been getting more solid at it. And I feel I'm getting better at improvising, but like I couldn't begin to like do like a jazz solo. You know, it's one thing for me to improvise on a hymn. You know, like how many times have we all heard like, "Oh, come all ye faithful," especially. But to improvise like a solo and stuff, that's still really, really difficult for me. But yeah, vocally, I would say I feel like I have a really good understanding of my own strengths and weaknesses in regards to like different styles. Like, I'm not a belter. Like, doing pop music is not my forte, but I feel like I have a good enough grip on my capability, like to the extent that I can pretend to be a pop singer, that when somebody asks me to sing that way, like for Snake Eater, for example, for Video Games Live, that was so hard. I can't even convey to you how much
I practiced.
Oh, sounded
awesome
that.
Though. Like, that was that was super cool.
Oh, thank you. That really means a lot, believe me. Yeah. Okay. Makes me feel really good.
But, that's good.
I had to practice that. You know, if anybody is ever thinking like, how do you do what you do? The answer is practicing a ton, because that did not come easily to me at all. That was like the hardest piece I ever had to learn. And as a result, again, I feel like I have a better understanding of my voice, but I had to strategize everything. Like, well, I can't sustain this note for longer than like 2 beats, so I'm gonna have to come up with another way to do that. And kind of that kind of strategizing, basically.
That meant, well, you know, Laura, no one likes to hear practice as the answer to their problem. So couldn't you have made it something like a genie or something a little more interesting?
Obviously, if your last name is Entravia, you're perfect.
You heard it here first. So speaking of all those different elements coming together, mm-hmm. some being tough, some being a little more natural, was this piece kind of a revision heavy project for you, or did it flow together easily?
I think it took me like the better part of a year to, and like, not that I was like working on it every day for a year, but like mm-hmm. I kind of started with that climactic moment and I knew where I wanted it to be, and then I was like, I'm not sure I have a good enough picture of the rest of this to like really dig into this right now. And then of course you have like other projects and stuff, so it was always like, I call it congealing. It was always congealing mm-hmm. in the back of my head, and sometimes pieces just kind of incubate like that with me for a while. There are a couple of art songs that I wrote while I was in school that similarly, I had like read a poem and it just kind of stuck in my head for a year, and then I finally, you know, like felt like it had formulated enough in my head that I could do something with it. So it wasn't revision heavy when I was actually working on it. Like, when I finally sat down, I felt like I had a solid enough picture of the form and stuff, but certainly it took me a long time to even get to that point, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
No, that, yeah, like the actual, you know, process of putting it together wasn't mm-hmm. the long ordeal. It was the slow, ethereal formulation beforehand.
Exactly.
Definitely. I've had projects like that before.
Yeah, the other challenge, now that I think of it, was vocally, when I was working on it, I wanted it to not be like this operatic style, which is kind of what my go-to is, mm-hmm. unfortunately. I wanted it to be a little bit lighter and like not like pop oriented, but you know, just like light and pretty, you know, instead of like, you were there, like, you know, like that kind of heavy sound. Right. So that took me a while to get the hang of like kind of pulling off of the sound a little bit. That took a lot of vocal takes when I was doing it to get the right sound. So that was definitely revision heavy.
Because I can definitely hear in the tone that at any moment you could turn this into a full-blown opera, but you are holding back.
I know what moments you're talking about.
And that's not a bad thing. I think that it turned out really, really well. But I
awesome.
You could definitely morph the entire tone into like a the blink of an eye.
Oh,
if you
totally.
Wanted to.
You know, the funny thing, ironically, is that when I perform it live, I find this happens a lot between like studio performance and live performance. Like in a studio, I can get really close to the mic, right, and like do this like mm-hmm. really soft "The Island Bays and the Songs." But like in a room full of like, you know, 1,000 people and there's 100 people on stage, like to be able to match just the space of the room and you know, of course the number of people in the orchestra, you kind of have to sing it operatically. And it's I think it sounds good. Like it's not like full blown opera. Like it's still not like quite like that tone, but uh-huh. it definitely has to be more full when you're performing it live, I find. So there's that's always comforting to me when I have to perform it live, that yes. I don't need to concentrate so hard on trying
there's
to pull back.
There's more room to fill in that
totally.
Kind of situation. It feels more natural.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that kind of wraps up most of the questions that I had, unless there's anything you wanted to bring up before we peace out.
Well, you know, one thing that I found was really cool, that hadn't even occurred to me when I first arranged the piece was, uh-huh. Last year I premiered it at, a New York show for Video Games Live. And then there was a Boston show coming up like a couple of months later. And mm-hmm. my friends, Omar and Brendan were going to be in town that day because they're in town because they live there.
Yeah, that's convenient.
So, They happened to be free on the day of the show, so I asked Tommy, because Brendan had recorded an album with me, I said, maybe we can, you know, play some music from that and show people, like, what we worked on for this Chrono Trigger album. I bet people would really like that. And I said, hey, you know, my friend Omar is available that day. Maybe he could sing on Tetris. And, you know, we were just, like, talking about, like, that'll be fun. You know, have some friends perform at the concert, have a couple uh-huh. extra guests. And then it hit me that we were doing Eco, and Brendan is a pianist and Omar is a tenor, and wouldn't it be freaking amazing if Brendan could play and then Omar and I could actually be the characters from
the game? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I was like, why didn't this occur to me when I was even like making my own arrangement? Because it would have been perfect. So anyway, like, and I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of Omar, but like it's remarkable how much he looks like the character from the game. Like,
oh, wow.
The same, he has black hair and like the kind of the same skin tone. So I was like, this is kind of like perfect. This will look really neat on stage. So we ended up performing it at the show, and Tommy had put together the video for it, and it just times out so perfectly where we start from opposite ends of the stage and approach each other. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is that it really added a whole different like side of the piece for me, like being uh-huh. able to do something that dramatic, you know, especially in the context of Video Games Live, which is like, it's an orchestral show. Like it's mostly, you know, we have soloists and things like that, but mm-hmm, we never mm-hmm. really tell a story necessarily. And it was really, really cool to see, like looking out in the audience, like when I had space to kind of like take it in, the looks on people's faces as they were taking in like video game happening with two people on, you know, live on stage and also seeing what was happening on the screen. It felt really cool. I'm not trying to like blow my own trumpet, but it felt really artistic in a way that I don't think I'd ever done anything with VGL quite that way before. And I was really happy that it was this game, you know, because I think this game in particular was a really artistic game, you know, just in every way. It's not just about the gameplay. It's about this really compelling but simple story. And It was really cool to have the opportunity to do that, and I'll forever be grateful to Tommy for letting me give it a try with video.
That is
live.
Really awesome. I wish I had been to that show. Is that like on the internet anywhere, or is it kind of lost to time?
You know, it is online on my dad's cell phone camera, so it's not really a great picture.
Okay.
But we are going to be doing it again at the New Jersey show coming up in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to plant people in the audience with cameras.
Oh, good.
So,
all right. Thank you.
So we can get good footage of it this time. But yeah, I'll send you the link to that version, because it came out really, really great.
That's awesome. And it also adds a lot of texture to the, like you said, to the setting and even the lyrics, because you can mm-hmm. kind of interpret those lyrics coming from either of the characters.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I totally forgot to mention that myself. And I think that's so cool that, like, in the original, even, it's a boy singing. It could easily be a girl's voice. Like, it's uh-huh. kind of androgynous that way. And I can't, like, say anything to spoil the game, but I think it's particularly compelling who is helping who by the end of that scene. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, really neat. And we tried to convey that in the actual live performance as well. So
that's a cool. I love that idea of a little bit of, you know, live performance along with the orchestra. Like, you've got the screens, you got the orchestra, and then you've got human beings moving back and forth and fitting
absolutely.
To that. That's really awesome.
Yeah, and it looks cool because we're in, like, concert dress versions of their costumes. Like, I have, like, a white and black dress, and he's wearing, like, a vermilion shirt and white pants. Uh-huh. Like, we look like kind of half modern day, half the characters. Oh, and we did it at Red Rocks. Sorry, I got really excited because I just remembered that. We did it at the Red Rock show over the summer. And I do believe there is video of this somewhere that I hope I'm going to get my hands on, that, like, it was outdoors and the wind was blowing. So my dress was like just blowing in the wind. And it looked so cool.
That sounds rad.
And, like, we're approaching each other in the middle of the stage and, like, the wind is blowing and there's this, it was the most epic effing moment of my life. Sorry, I got really excited just telling that story, but it was
no, that cool. That's a story well worth getting excited for.
So hopefully I will be retrieving video of that at some point.
maybe you got to get some wind machines set up for New Jersey. I don't know, man.
Just a bunch of people at the bottom of the stage flapping programs.
That is great. I'm glad I accidentally reminded you of that story.
Yes, me too.
See, what a clever host I am.
How do you do what you do?
I don't know. I don't know how. When Brian's here, I panic a little bit. So, so I guess that'll pretty much wrap up the interview. But before we go, is there anything that you have in the pipeline remix wise or you have other things going on these days?
Harmony of a Champion should be coming out early next year, which is something working on for the past year. So it's going to be an album of Pokemon music, and there's a Facebook page if you want to keep updated on information with that. And then there's another project I'm working on that I can't say what I'm doing, but I am actually making arrangements for it instead of just recording for it this time, so that'll be cool.
Okay.
And collaborating with my friend Kristen Nigus, who is Field of Reeds. I think I said her last name wrong. I'm sorry, Kristen. But the there's one more thing I'm working on that I am totally forgetting. Oh, yes, I'm working on a piano album. I kind of want to keep it a surprise until it's all done. But I'm working on another piano album with Brendan.
Okay.
That's going to be really cool. And we're going to record that in January. So lots of fun stuff going on.
That's awesome. And if people want to track you down on the internet, where can they do that?
You can plug my name into Google. You can go to my website. I usually update that when I have, like, new projects going on. If you want to hear any of my music, I link a lot of it there. Or I have a YouTube. It's just, I think it's like youtube.com/flutelink. I don't think it's my actual name. But yeah, I've got YouTube. I've got a fan page on Facebook, and I try to keep everybody updated pretty frequently. So find me online.
Great. Well told. and that pretty much wraps up our interview. It was
great.
A pleasure having you on here again, Laura.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Well, you are very welcome. And hey, you need to get on submitting some songs for OC Remix, because then we can feature your songs in the Remix Rewind section.
Ooh,
and
totally.
You can hear us talk over them rudely.
Awesome.
With our opinions.
I look forward to it.
All right. Well, thanks again, Laura.
Thank you, Stephen.
And we will return you to the show. That was an interview wherein I was not there, so really good stuff.
Sorry you missed that one.
That's okay.
Yeah, you were lost in the woods or something.
I actually forget what I was at the time, but something made it very not able for me to be there. So
yeah,
I might have been sick, which is ironic. So. Or I don't know, coincidental? I can't think straight right now because I'm sick. Maybe.
Because you're sick.
All right, it is time, Stephen, for our send-off here at the end of the episode. So let's throw a bunch of, like, random social media information at the listener's ears.
Man, now you make it sound real bad.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's try to make this as pleasant as possible.
Okay.
If you want to learn more about us, you can do so at ocremix.org and listen to all the nice music that you've heard on the show as well. And Twitter works too. Go to OCR Podcast if you want to get in touch with us.
Yep. You can also email us at podcast@ocremix.org. We would appreciate submissions to the playlist.
ideas for anyone you would like to have interviewed.
Pronunciations on certain names.
Pronunciations for certain names, and especially like new stuff. If you have any interesting articles or happenings that you think we might not find or that we might be interested in for an episode, send them our way and we'll talk about it on the show as well.
Yeah, and we'll even plug you in the episode. We won't just rip off your news stories.
I was planning to rip off the news stories, but sure, we'll do that. Why not?
Oh. Well, if you want to learn more about us and our ethics, you can go do all of that at whalesorwhales.com.
We need to add an ethics page.
That's whales, A-R-E, whales.com.
All right, and with that, we're going to send off to the playlist. So we will see you all next week.
Have a good week. End. What day is it?
I don't know. Saturday?
The playlist is a weekly collection of recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is off-brand Mario. Los Angeles from Mario is Missing, submitted by the M-Disc Playlist Podcast.
Beneath the Forest of Mushrooms, originally from Super Mario RPG and remixed by Descendants of Erdrick, submitted by Phoenix Down.
From Mario Paint and submitted by Brendan Bronson.
Crystal Canyon from Super Mario Strikers and submitted by Zachary.
from Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door and submitted by Square Evil.
Mushrise Park from Mario and Luigi Dream Team, submitted by me.
From Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Winter Games, Sochi 2014, and submitted by me.
You've been listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is character themes. If you have a favorite theme song for a character, send it our way. To submit your suggestions or just say howdy howdy ho ho, hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast. Email us at podcast@ocremix.org or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom:
do the Mario. Swing your arms from side to side. Come on, it's time to go. Do the Mario. Take one step and then again. Let's do the Mario. All together now. You've got it. It's the Mario. Do the Mario. Swing your arms from side to side. Come on, it's time to go. Do the Mario. Take one step, and then again. Let's do the Mario. All together now. Come on now. Just like that. Slide, slide, slide from Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Whimper Game, Whimper Games.
Whimper.
That's actually not the worst title they could have chosen.